Let me go on to something else. In this little speech, Mr. Pritchard, on the state trials,
yes,
you mentioned that there is no record of the state trial in the archives, in the Manitoba archives. Does that mean there is no public record of this trial anywhere?
It's gone. That is the statement of Jack Walker, who is in McMurray's office, brought him, a young lawyer. He wasn't born at the time of the trials. He tried. Professor McCormick, who teaches Canadian history in Winnipeg University, mm-hmm. he tried to get them, find them. And he told me, you can get the transcript of any trial in the history of Manitoba except this one, which was the biggest.
Right.
They had a bigger panel of jurors, of veneer men, for this trial than for the whole of the assizes. And this was for just one trial. And then they had the effrontery to make a motion in court that they be allowed to extend that panel indefinitely.
Right.
That is when I made my famous little talk on what is called Pritchard's cake and eat it speech.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Penner, did you find a transcript of the trial anywhere? A complete transcript?
I found sections. I found the judge's charge.
Oh, they were published.
Yes.
The Defense Committee published that.
Yes. But you mean the
the transcript the, no. of the all of yes. the trial mm-hmm. itself.
Yes, I wouldn't. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
His speech to the his talk to the jury was published.
Yes.
In the Russell case.
Yes, because that was taken to the Privy Council. The Defense Committee decided to appeal the Russell case to the Privy Council in the hope that would be a test case of the legality of the
What do you think happened to the transcript? Was it deliberately destroyed somewhere, do you think?
One can follow the lead of the Watergaters and surmise, you see. And at that point in time, whatever,
right.
somebody went down and took them out of there.
The
GEMCO and
I'll tell you.
He burned them.
It became inoperative.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Constitutional.
Just on that one reference, now that we're talking about Watergate, I think there is, without stretching the point too much, a similarity between the essential content of the Watergate and the essential content of what the government did in 1919. Because the government in 1919 bent the laws, ignored the laws, or made post facto laws to suit their purposes in order to convict the strikers. The strikers were sentenced under an amendment to the criminal code which was not in existence when they were arrested. J.S. Woodsworth also mentions in a speech that he made when he first took his seat in Parliament that the Citizens Committee of 1000 hired a private detective agency to spy on the workers to supplement the already espionage activity of the RCMP, and that although these were hired by the Citizens Committee, the bill for them was secretly paid by the federal government.
So it was a case of inventing a law to suit
the
crime.
That's right.
In that connection, and I have friends in Vancouver, you know, still, mm-hmm. and they want me to tell them about the iniquity in the other fellow's backyard. Mm-hmm. I said, just a minute, as young people, don't worry about Watergate. That's Uncle Sam's business. It's amusing. But remember this, Canada had its Watergate half a century ago. The same spy system, the same arrests before laws were passed legalizing. They took all those fellows to Stony Mountain, you know.
Yes.
Sharitonoff and all those boys from the north. I met those in the penitentiary. They were arrested, then the law was passed afterwards. Nice. The correspondence is there. And this fellow, Andrews, he made a little fortune out of being Deputy Minister of Justice and then leading counsel for the Crown.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yes, he was actually the chairman of the Citizens Committee,
and they
which was supposed to be a private committee. He was acting deputy minister of justice, and then he turns up as chief crown prosecutor in the trials, and his bill for the latter services were $32,000.
Paid by the citizen committee?
No, paid by the federal government.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And he had a hard time, of course, deciding on which day he was the deputy minister of justice and which day he was chairman of the citizens committee. For instance, after the Bloody Saturday, when the riot took place, when one person was killed and 30 wounded, Andrews arrives at the office of the print shop, which was printing the strikers' paper, and said, "You must forthwith cease and desist printing this paper." Signed, A.J. Andrews. And then he hurried to put on deputy minister of justice.
He was a quick change artist.
This was foreshadowing Hitler. That horrible man. We had him here, 10 o'clock in the morning until 10 at night for a trial. You know, they usually go home for supper at 5. And I was doing my best to keep my end alive. And I referred to my distinguished and learned friend, who evidently was getting a good fee for daytime and time and a half for overtime, and I wanted to be treated the same, and I was getting nothing. And that's what I've got now at the end of it.
But didn't you also...
But a lot of fun.
Didn't you also characterize your legal friends on the other side as embodiments of learned ignorance?
Yeah,
that's your phrase.
Yeah.
Indoor minds, that was the first I used on the lawyers, our lawyers as well as the other fellows. They were all the same. They're outside the realm of life, dry, law.
Mr. Penner, would you say there's a new interest in the events of the strike in the last year or two?
Yes, definitely. And I think it goes hand in hand with a general re-looking that's taking place at the history of Canada. Professor Stuart Jameson at the University of British Columbia published a book a few years ago called Labor Unrest in Canada. And he makes the point in general that every generation must look at history anew, fresh. And I think this is happening. And one of the greatest sources of interest to the student youth particularly is the history of the labor movement, which they're beginning to see in a new light, and which is essential to get a proper understanding of the forces that are at work, because this country was not made by the prime ministers, was not made by the generals, was made by the people. And a very important element in making that history has been the history of the labor movement, of which this was probably the climactic point.
Isn't that the history of any society?
Yes.
And not names and dates and kings and queens and their mistresses and paramours, but the activity of those who produce wealth.
Right.
That's what keeps society going.
That's right.
If that stops, we die.
Hmm? Yes.
Of course. That's the basis.
And I must say, just as a personal note, that in studying the history of Winnipeg 1919, it's a great thrill to me to meet one of the central figures.
Right.
So we're not that far away from the history that we're talking about.
Oh, we have a living link right here.
A living link, yes. And all of the reviews, without exception, have congratulated us on putting out this book, on making this document available, and in making Mr. Pritchard's speech available, and in reprinting the disclosures that were made in 1926 in the House of Commons by Peter Heenan,
right.
Yeah. About what actually went on behind the doors.
And that was read into Hansard.
That was read into
Hansard.
That's right.